This is Straight Talk Africa. I'm Hayley Adams. A warm welcome to you. A silent war, stories of human suffering and resilience in Congo, is a poignant documentary that sheds light on the humanitarian crisis in the eastern parts of the Democratic Republic of Congo. This VOA documentary takes an in-depth look at the lives of people who have been internally displaced because of conflict and the impact of persistent intercommunal militia attacks and military operations on the Congolese people. A little later on, we're going to speak to the producer of this documentary, my VOA colleague Omari Kaseko. But first, we're going to show you an excerpt of A Silent War, Stories of Human Suffering and Resilience in Congo.
I was running from the rebels, and I heard a loud noise, as if something had broken. Then I realized my leg was injured and the veins were cut. I couldn't walk. I fell to the floor. When I looked at my leg, I saw that the skin in that area was completely damaged. I had to use my clothes to wrap around my leg. Some men noticed me, and they decided not to leave me there. They carried me and took me to the hospital, Ibambo. And then doctors transferred me to a hospital in Rutshuru, where they collaborated with foreign doctors to provide assistance. They helped me with my leg by taking some skin from another part of my body and crafting it onto my leg.
When the war started, it was at 2 a.m. We began hearing the sounds of guns and bombs. Then we heard people starting to run. I was pregnant and had children, so I couldn't run at night. My husband said he had to run because rebels always look for men. So he ran away and left me with the children. The rebels came to my house. I had a small shop outside selling alcohol. So they destroyed my door and entered my house. They found me with kids. They drank all the alcohol there and forced me to give them all the money I had. Then they started raping me. They warned me that if I screamed, they would kill me. While they were raping me, they destroyed my urinary system, and the baby died inside.
And that is an excerpt from VOA's new documentary, A Silent War, Stories of Human Suffering and Resilience in Congo. And joining me now is the man behind the camera and the production of this VOA documentary, Omari Kaseko. Omari, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Congratulations, first of all, on this documentary. Really, really stellar work. Give us some insight, Omari, into what it was like to be behind the camera. What struck you most about the story, not just about the people you were filming, but the places you were filming in?
Thank you. Glad to be here, Heidi. I think to me, it was sexual violence, ongoing sexual violence in these camps. It was shocking to see people who actually fled their homes. And then they went to these camps thinking that at least we're going to be safe here.
Right.
But still, they are facing all the sexual violence issues that you can think about in these camps. It was shocking to me. And keep in mind, there's large number of people in these refugee camps. So ongoing sexual violence to me was striking. It was shocking. And at the same time, to just find a lot of women and children who actually have no hope. You know, they don't know what next. They are shortage of food. They can't really find food to eat. They're not sure what's going to happen tomorrow. what's going to happen today. They wake up every day not knowing what's going to happen, what they're going to eat, and what's next for them. That was shocking to me. But they're not safe. Even if they're in these camps, they're not safe. We spoke to a lot of people, different humanitarian organizations, and the increased number of sexual violence cases was alarming to me. It was shocking. And this crisis, Haiti, is about women and children. Mm. You find a large number of children walking around. They don't go to school. So you can imagine a camp like Ibulengo camp, for example, where we spend a lot of time there, you find a lot of children who are not going to school. And I would say 90% of those children are not going to school. So you can imagine what DRC is building in the future.
Omari, what are these human rights or outfits, these human rights organizations or any aid organizations that are there, what are they telling you about their ability to cope with the problems that come arise from this crisis?
So the key word is funding. When you speak to these humanitarian organizations, we spoke to, for example, Norwegian Refugee Council, and the communication officer was telling us that the need in DRC, 26 million people are in need in DRC, and they can only reach 10 million people so far. So this is general need. So you see large number of people are outside of, you know, these basic needs. And as you know, the world has been facing different crises, bigger crises, you know, Russia, Ukraine, Sudan, and other places. So it's really difficult for them to get funding to be able to help these people. And this is the most important thing in DRC, because sometimes people in DRC feels like they are forgotten. You know, no one is helping them. No one is there to help them. So it's really difficult for them. They are there. People are looking at them as a solution. They're there. They can help us. But they can only do so much with little funding that they have. That was really a big issue. So, again, the key word is funding.
And it's so interesting, of course, when you look at how the world, as you mentioned now, how the world has become only more dangerous. And the more dangerous the rest of the world becomes, the silence falls on this conflict. And correct. As you rightly call it, it's a silent war, essentially.
Correct.
Omari, do stay with us. We're going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we'll bring you more of Omari's documentary, A Silent War, Stories of Human Suffering and Resilience in Congo. Straight Talk Africa will be back in a moment.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Sextortion is the abuse of power to obtain a sexual benefit, according to a study done by Harvard University. It can manifest itself in various forms, including demanding sex in exchange for grade. This unsavory practice is used against female students in Nigeria, Botswana, Tanzania, and it's been used to exploit women seeking employment in South Africa. This week on Our Voices, we are discussing the sextortion of women in Africa. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
You're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. Our focus this week is the new VOA documentary, A Silent War, Stories of Human Suffering and Resilience in Congo. It's a powerful story of resilience in the face of conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. We're going to play you another excerpt from the film, but first I'm going to bring in my colleague here at The Voice of America, Omari Kaseko. He's filmed and produced this documentary. Omari, welcome back again. And of course, earlier we got a glimpse of the scale of the humanitarian situation in Eastern DRC, as well as a look into the lives of women and children caught up in the conflict. Tell us what we are about to see next. Tell us a little more about this particular excerpt.
So this conflict is not about military. It's not. It's bigger than just military conflict. It's also political. And what we'll see here is how politics plays a big part in this conflict. Let's take a look.
The crucial point to acknowledge is that the adversary in this situation is the Rwandan military. It is the Rwandan military that is orchestrating the activities of the M23 rebels. And this is a fact that we are fully aware of.
Mr. President, the involvement of Rwanda in its responsibility for a tragedy my country is experiencing and the tragedy of my compatriots living in areas occupied by the Rwandan army and their allies from the M23 are no longer in any doubt.
Based on what the government in DRC is talking about, is blaming us, we are supporting M23, and then the M23 must go back to where they came from. We even try to explain almost on a regular basis how those people fighting there did not actually come from here.
There are very credible reports of support for armed groups by all sides, including the FDLR, by Congolese forces, and M23, by Rwandans. And our position is clear. Whoever it's by, whoever it's to, that support needs to cease for any armed group.
Any force commander that sit in this chair thinking that it's a military operation, you will not succeed, because it's not. It's not. It's a political, diplomatic, and military operation.
There's been a feeling in Kigali that Rwanda has the right to determine what goes on in Eastern Congo, and it has the right to help itself to the minerals there. It has the right to be a key player strategically, commercially, politically.
War has regrettably become a means of attaining power, as some think engaging in warfare can yield certain gains. The world is aware of this nation's wealth, particularly the state of North Kivu, where valuable minerals are abundant. Various parties seek to extend their hands in regions rich in minerals, which serves as a driving force behind the conflicts in North Kivu.
The individuals making these allegations primarily include the government of Congo, former military members and civil society members who openly declared hostility towards Rwanda. Additionally, certain illegal armed groups in the forests of Congo echo those accusations. Those are what's written in these reports.
As we have repeatedly mentioned, Rwanda collaborates with M23, or its founders, the movement notorious for perpetrating massacres.
Well, now, Omari, just as we saw there, it's not just, of course, the humanitarian aspect to this. There's also the political dimension, as you mentioned. Talk to us a little more about how, as you were filming this, how you saw the politics really come into play in the crisis unfolding in the eastern part of Democratic Republic of Congo.
So there's a feeling in eastern Congo that Kigali has a lot to do with this conflict that is happening there. And of course, they blame Kigali And we spoke to a lot of people there.
Here, of course, just for some context for our audience, here we are talking about Rwanda's role, neighboring Rwanda's role in this. Please continue.
Correct. So they blame Rwanda, saying that Rwanda is, you know, supporting M23. And of course, Rwanda is responsible for what is happening there. So that's coming from the side of Congo. But also, Kigali, like you saw, also President Kagame has been saying this over and over, that they're not responsible for what's going on in Eastern Congo. But it creates an environment where it's difficult for these countries, and especially these countries are also in East African community. So it's very difficult. East African community now has regional forces that went to Eastern DRC to try and calm this conflict and make sure there's peace in the area. But still, things have been going, haven't been going well for them. M23 is a big player right now. M23 has weapons. And of course, M23 have been saying, we spoke to them in this documentary, have been saying that we need to be able to talk to Kinshasa. But the problem is also Kinshasa hasn't been able to sit down with M23 to talk about this. So it's political, where you feel like what is happening in Eastern Congo and other areas of Congo, they are blaming Rwanda. Rwanda is also saying we have nothing to do with what's happening there. Secretary of State Blinken, last year, as you saw in a documentary, he said there's evidence that Congo also is supporting armed group, which is basically FDRR, who are saying that, you know, there's a fear that FDRR are planning to go and, you know, overthrow Rwanda regime. So it's very political issue going on there, but at the same time, all key players in East Africa are involved. However, there's been talks going on, led by Kenya. For example, Uhuru Kenyatta has been leading negotiations. Negotiations have been in Nairobi. They've been in Angola to find a solution and to make sure, like, you know, we get to the bottom of this conflict. However, some of these talks haven't been able to, you know, mature and came to fruition as we expected. So it's very political, as we saw there. And obviously, key players in East Africa are involved and needs to be able to sit down and talk about this.
As I say, you know, with conflicts all around the world, rarely are these conflicts brought to an end on the battlefield. You Correct. Need a political agreement, a political solution at some point. Speaking of solutions, Amari, how intractable a problem or crisis is this? I mean, what are experts telling you about what needs to be done to address this problem, possibly bring this crisis to an end as soon as possible?
There are a few things that people are suggesting, and some of them make sense. Some of them are difficult to be able to, you know, they're not achievable easily. But we spoke to one expert, for example, Michaela Rong, who was telling us that it's very, very important for European Union and, of course, United States to impose sanctions on Rwanda. They've done that. European Union in July, they imposed sanctions on some of the individuals. They feel like they're responsible for causing all these problems in Eastern DRC. So the sanctions came out. But of course, people feel like big players are being left out of the sanctions and it doesn't reach them. So that's why this is continuing.
That they're too targeted, the sanctions on individuals?
Yes, these sanctions were targeted individuals. They went to some of the individuals who are, some of them are in M23, some of them are in Rwandan military, for example, and of course other parts. Also in DRC also. Right. Who are DRC FARDESE, DRC military force. So these sanctions are targeting individuals, but the feeling is these sanctions are not really doing anything to the big players, and that's why things are continuing to be where, you know, they are in Eastern DRC.
Yeah. Let's take a look at what they told you in that regard.
Thank you.
Peace is what we need. We need peace first, even if you feed them. If there is no peace, then there is nothing. All these people you see here were in their homes, farming. They were used to eat vegetables, potatoes, and different food. What we ask God to help us with is peace, so these people can go back to their homes. If they go back, they will be safe. But if they're still here, there are diseases. There is diarrhea, cholera, measles, fever, coughing. Because they live in a congested area.
According to the humanitarian response plan, 26 million people are in need in DRC in 2023. The humanitarian response plan is covering 10 million in 2023. 2022, it was 8.8. The crisis is worsening, so we need attention.
The problem is that it's the Congolese government that doesn't want peace. We asked them to open a road for us, but they refused. We asked them to sit down and talk with us. They refused. We asked for the refugees to go back to their homes, but they refused and caused more confusion. The problem is that the Congolese government doesn't want peace. We want people to go back to their homes, and we love people.
Well, the obvious solution is some form of sanctioning. And what we've seen are some, just recently, we've seen some sort of rather watered down attempts at sanctioning. So the EU in July issued a list of seven men that it wanted to sanction. Some of these men were in the armed militia groups inside Eastern Congo. Some of them were part of the M23. And I don't have any doubt that these men are responsible for the bloodletting and the rape and the massive turbulence that we're seeing in Eastern Congo. But the point is, why remain at such a low level? We know that the chain of command goes a lot further up.
I think Congolese government need to do anything to find a solution. I don't know if they will negotiate with Rwanda or M23. Because government refused to negotiate with them. But why they're refusing to negotiate while people continue to die?
As you can see, Heidi, we are seeing different people are saying different things, maybe to find solution for this. But a lot of people in these camps, when you talk to them, they want to go home. They want peace. That's all they want. It doesn't matter. They just want peace to go home so they can go back to their farms. You know, they can go back to their normal lives. And these are people who have lost so much. So these people, when you talk to them, they say the government, Congolese government, should be able to sit down and talk to M23 and find a solution. Because there's nothing that can be achieved without talks. So if there's a way that Congolese government can sit down with Rwanda, with M23, and keep in mind, it's not only M23 in those areas. I mean, we were covering M23 in Eastern Congo, but there's ADF, there's different armed groups in Congo. But I think the biggest worry for them is, can Kinshasa sit down and talk to these people? It's really difficult to ignore a group like M23 right now, because they've shown that they are big players. You know, they have weapons, they have resources. You know, recently there was threats of them taking over Goma. So you can see this group has been there for a while now, and they keep rising. So if Kinshasa can sit down and talk to them, I think that's what people are hoping in these camps. And so that way they can go back and you know, continue with their daily lives.
And so interesting that the more towns are overtaken, the more people are likely to be displaced, just as they have to dodge bullets and run for their lives.
Correct.
And also very striking, Omari, is that the people who are bearing the brunt of this conflict, who are the ones who are not holding the guns, that they are hopeful that sitting down and talking about this could actually help bring an end to it. Speaking of being hopeful, how did you feel, Omari, leaving, you know, when you're filming drew to a close, you were preparing to leave the country, or even as you left, what was on your mind, and how do you feel about the place that you had just spent 2 weeks in, really getting into the day-to-day lives of people? Did it leave you hopeful? Did you it leave you more worried than when you came?
I was more worried, and I still am worried up to now, because you are looking at a large number of people who are displaced inside their own country. And my thinking was, how did Africa allow this to happen, to get to this level? This is a very, very large number of people being displaced. And still, this is ongoing. As we speak right now, there are people still who are moving, because M23 is taking some of these villages, some of these towns. So people are being displaced even now. But if we have African Union, we have East African Community, how did we allow this to happen to this level? And when you talk to people there, they feel like they are being left behind by themselves. They have to figure out what is happening by themselves. I'm going to give you a scenario where you have a woman who left her home. You know, she lost her husband. She doesn't know where some of her kids were right now, because, you know, these people came at night, some of them, or they just started running, so they don't know where their kids are. And then you are in a camp, and then you are trying to at least survive in these camps, because it's survival, it's not living. It's survival, where they just go to fetch firewood and they get raped, they get all these kind of problems. So they're hopeful that maybe, you know, is there any solution? Is there any way I can go back home? And when they talk of themselves, thinking that this has been ongoing for years and years and years, and this is still happening, it's really heartbreaking. You see, like, there's no really hope.
And like you said, how can this have been allowed to happen?
And
in the first place,
yes.
Omari, but you played a really important role in bringing the story and the urgency of the story to our viewers. Thank you so much, as your colleague. Thank you so much. I take my hat off to you for the great work you've done. You can, of course, catch the full documentary on voaafrica.com. The film is A Silent War, Stories of Human Suffering and Resilience in Congo. And that is it for us this week. Thank you, Omari, and thanks to the more than 300 affiliate TV and radio stations that bring you this show across the African continent every week. Thank you so much for joining us on all our platforms. Thank you for always watching and for always listening. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.